Sirius XM Radio.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide a lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy late hits a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. About 10 minutes, a little less than 10, actually. Top of the hour, and one of the real treats was going to be that Jeff Franklin was going to, you know, have the opportunity the next 2 weeks, this week and next, to come out so we could do Win Using Thorograph live. It didn't occur to me that it would be continuing a daily jock agent Hall of Fame series of conversations, because it's all jock agents all the time.
Well, it's funny. We just got off the off with Vince, and we said the agents don't need to be here for the draw, but they still have to come out and do business. Of course, Jeff's hasn't been an agent for a long time, but it is interesting, right? A lot of, most of the people here, and who's got all the stories?
Jock agents.
The jock agents. They got all, and that's why. Seriously, that's why I miss that part of the game. Of course, I'm not in the office now anymore, but in the office, I love those days in the morning. I didn't mind agents floating through the office either. Like I told you, I kind of like that, sitting in the office. And I learned, you know, I would pick up little tidbits, or they would drop in from, you know, call this guy for this race. He doesn't really want to go, but, you know, if you get in trouble, call him. I would learn as much from them as, you know, they were snooping around the office. And I just like the interaction, because I said the other day, I thrive in confusion because I can make my way through it. And where other people are, wait, what's going on with the music on and everything else? I enjoyed it. And so I could sift through that. And as I walk through offices around the country now, and it's just so quiet, it's like, whoa, where's the buzz? Where's the interaction? And so I love most agents are my friends. I'm sure there's some out there that we don't get along, but,
Well, of course, technology has changed the game so much, yeah. But I'd like to think that...
You know what? Hold on just a second. I just got a text that says they've decided to cancel racing this weekend here at Santa Anita.
So they'll run, but they'll run tomorrow. They'll run the car tomorrow?
Apparently they'll run the car tomorrow. Just said racing has been canceled.
Saturday, Sunday.
And I just looked at the weather forecast. It's basically virtually a 100% chance of rain and heavy rain, and that's the name of the game out here in Southern California. So there you go.
Wow.
And you know what? Looking at the upside, I imagine most of those races, I don't know about days. I don't know if they're adding a day or two next week or a day, but those races will fill into the card, the Santa Anita Derby weekend cards for the next weekend, and you know, may turn out to be a, you know, help some of the races there, but certainly a different way of handling things than when we were around, right, Jeff?
To be sure. That's a curveball this morning. Well, where were we?
Yeah, sorry about that.
No. So really,
we're talking about the agent.
And you know, Hammer, in the old days, I would get here at about 4:30 in the morning, and I'd start my day with the likes of Charlie Whittingham, whose jacket I'm now proudly wearing, and Wayne Lucas and some of the other early guys. And by the time you get down here at Clocker's Corner at 5:30, there'd be 200 people out here exchanging, beginning the game, as it were, for the day. And so, a lot's changed, but and we've mechanized so much of it, done by text and everything. But still, the stories are the best, you know, and you can't make this stuff up. You just can't.
They're all true. Right. And
Right. It's a revolving poker game. And, in the old days, going to the draw and getting into fights and, you know, oh, my gosh, it was just too much fun. So, and you got paid for it. Who can make this up? So.
Well, on both sides of the counter, you know, there would sometimes be fights amongst agents, and then sometimes there'd be fights amongst and we're not talking, you know, brawls, although once in a blue moon you'd get that, but I'm talking about yelling and screaming, you mother, blah, 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 back and forth, and all, you know, all over a mount or a mistake, or no, that's what you told me, no, it's not, and you know, even with some of the officials back and forth, you put me on the wrong horse, or you entered the
I remember one day going to the draw, and I knew that a fellow agent thought he had a call on a horse that I'm telling you was going to be like 3-5 in a 75 added stake. And the trainer came up to me like an hour before the draw, and he says, is Stevens open? And I said, yeah, we got scratched with so-and-so. And he goes, yeah, that's what I heard. He said, I'm putting you on. And he said, duck. Because he knew when this other agent found out, he was going to go ballistic. And sure enough, I stood at the entire long side of the racing office, and it came out with Stevens, and this guy went nuts, you know. Oh, my gosh. So those were days.
Right, and then the next morning, everything was, you know, most of the time, a new day.
A new day, and right? And you'd be fighting with the guy in the morning and take him out for dinner that night.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. It's too close of a community to stay. You know, once in a while, maybe you'd get days from it. You know, Bobby would give days to some people. Frank will take 30 days. You got 30 days. Go away. And then when your time was up, he let you back in the.
Right.
But like you said, we see each other every day, all day, morning, noon, and night. I mean, you can you have to get over it and carry on.
There you go. Yep. So, Dr. Bick, what about you? How are you enjoying the trip so far?
I love coming. I love coming here. But of course, I love going everywhere. So it I'm an easy. That's an easy answer for me. It doesn't matter from Oaklawn to. to fairgrounds, to it doesn't matter. I'm content wherever we go, and you come here. I mean, I always surprise people. They say, you know, what's your favorite racetrack? And when I say Santa Anita, they're always surprised. Oh, you live by Saratoga? Yeah. And Saratoga wouldn't even be second. Belmont would be second, actually. It's kind of funny. Wow. But I love coming here. And this is such a great place to do the show. I mean, it's a natural.
This is the best.
This is even better here than up in the up over there.
Where we were up
20
up top.
Feet away.
Yeah.
But you know something is interesting because you mentioned Frankel. It got me thinking. Here I am with a CW jacket on, and you know, segueing to Thoroughgraph. These were two guys that, even before I had ever heard of Thoroughgraph, knew about Sheets theory and practiced it. Frankel used to tell the jocks, when you're in a turf race, you save ground. I don't care if you get shut off five times, lose the race. I will not take you off the horse. So he understood even back then, long before numbers, that losing ground in a turf race was a kiss of death. I mean, how brilliant is that? And Charlie, I think Steve told the story on your program in the air, how he would give horses extraordinary periods of time to recover from efforts. And he knew that again, long before the numbers validated it. How brilliant were these guys?
They were brilliant.
They were brilliant.
Obviously, stood alone. And I never had the pleasure to do business with Charlie when I was a fan, and then I went back east, and then one time I came out, he was kind of winding down. So I didn't
have that connection
that I did with Bobby. And of course, we told some Frankel stories the other day, but with Bobby, you know, we'd like to spend the more, you'd look down and go, Bobby's going, oh, he's in the sixth race, which means he would be sitting in your office from the first race to the fifth lots of times. You know, he liked to come in and just kind of hang out if he didn't want to be out and about. And you know, he would just tell all kinds of stories about stuff. And I always say, my little thing was, I wouldn't, like, let him know what he was talking about, that I was listening, but we'd leave, I'd write down stuff because I'm going, oh, wow, I never thought of that. Just his mind was so sharp.
So do I have 1 minute?
Of course.
I want to digress into a Bobby Frankel story. So you're going to love this.
No, you love this.
So for about 2-3 years, when I was just getting started as a jocks agent, I was representing Kenny Black, and who was a brilliant rider. People didn't have a chance to watch him. Boy, could that guy ride. And I'd go by Frankel's barn every day, and I'd say, Mr. Frankel, you need anything to breeze? Mr. Frankel, can I help you with this? Bobby, you know, are you good in this race? For 2 years this goes on. He doesn't give me a call, won't even pay attention to me.
And who did you have at that time?
Kenny Black.
Okay.
So one day I go by his office, and Bobby's holding court in front of, I think Vince was there, Craig O'Brien, Scotty McClellan, Tony Matos, and he's talking about...
What about Johnny D?
No, Johnny D was not there that morning, but he hung out at Frankel's a lot. But anyway, so Frankel's up, like on his desk, preaching to the guys about a particular trainer who was buying a bunch of yearlings at the time for a lot of money, and what a genius the guy was. And he's going on and on and on. And after about 5 minutes, I couldn't stand it. And I said, Frankel, are you telling me that if I didn't give you $20 million a year to get yearlings, that you couldn't go out and do a good job? And I said, I'm done with this blank expletive. So I walked from his barn down to the entry booth. I opened up my condition book, and there's a tap on my shoulder. And I look, and it's Bobby Frankel. And I figured, oh, my God, he's about to swing at me. And he goes, open your book. And I'm saying to myself, dear Father God, please, please make me open it wherever he's going to. And he says, are you opening the seventh race? And I look at it, it's like a mile and eighth, A other than on the turf. Who do you want to ride for more than Frankel? I go, yeah, I'm open. He goes, yeah, I'm putting you on a horse for Sheikh Mohammed. I mean, for Judmont, excuse me, for Judmont. Just ran third in a grade three. What are you doing Friday night? I go, I don't know. He says, I'm putting you on Holiday Dancer in the Chapman down at Los Alamitos, like 1-5 shot. And I go, okay, Bobby, thanks. And he turned and walked away. And I realized this whole time, all Bobby was looking for was somebody who didn't have him on a pedestal. And that one moment where I just, like, equalized everything, Bobby became my friend for the next 20 years.
That's right.
And it was, he taught me so much in that one moment, you know? And so.
I just got another update. They're going to add Thursday, racing on Thursday next week. And those races that were off for Saturday and Sunday. We'll be offered on Thursday, and also as extras to fill in some extra races on next Saturday and Sunday, which is, I think, scheduled to be nice.
Nice. So they'll further come out with what races from the book, from the Saturday and Sunday book, will be added to the what's already in the book for Thursday.
Yes, figure that out. Which ones will be Thursday?
Well, and then there'll probably be extras that'll bleed into Friday, and it should make for a great 4 days of racing. Of course, Saturday is Santa Anita Derby Day, so you should this will work out to everybody's benefit.
Well, when you're in the racing office, like I was just saying before we came on, there's nothing picks your head up like a nice cancellation. And let's be honest, there's not a racing day out there. And, like I said, when you're in those meetings, oh, what should we do? Should we cancel? What, you know, you can't say it, but you're under the table going, please, 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 please. You know, once in a while when those cases came up. And because when I say that, I just means you can take those races or horses and fill them in, you know, and beef a card up. And in this situation, luckily it happened this week, and hopefully it'll help beef some races up for Sandy Derby card.
Yeah.
Let's go. I mean, as far as that goes.
And I don't know if you guys are checking the extended weather forecast as I am, but things are looking good.
Right. I did already before I said that. Let me double check that. I was checking because I
didn't want to jinx you, Hammer.
Well, first thing I did last night was I checked Oaklawn because they've just had just a horrible luck. And actually, the fairgrounds has had it too. But so once I did that, I go, let me check around town here. But we just said Oaklawn is going to have a, you know, fast and firm. At Oakland, and that's just the grass walking over. It's not
the infield for the fans will be firm.
Yes,
right.
I love it.
Okay, good.
I love it. Jeff Franklin with us. How? Where do you live? How far away are you?
I live about 2 miles right up the hill there.
Unbelievable.
In fact, there, if when the fog lifts, you'll see a big M, which stands for Monrovia High School. Oh. When they score a touchdown, it blinks. I'm about 300 yards right below that. So 3 days a week, I'm hiking up in those mountains, Steve.
I love it.
Well, you're a hiker, too.
Yep.
I just went on a nice hike yesterday in Malibu.
It'd be nice if that sun came back out. Now it's getting cold again. It's the strangest... It's the strangest
and the fog,
scenario.
The fog has lifted, but not entirely.
No.
It's lifted just enough to see the horses, but other than that, we can't see the mountains again.
It's very funny. It's been a very unusual
It's been an unusual
morning.
Winter, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Crazy. We should give you the same opportunity that the Jock Agents Parade has been offered. You've already mentioned a couple, you know, including Stevens and Kenny Black. Who else over the years did you?
I was fortunate to have P. Val's book and in fact, negotiated the Paulson contract where he rode Mr. Paulson's horses for those couple of years. So Arazis and horses like that. I represented Robbie Davis, and my first jock ever, not too many people know, was a guy named Carlos Delgadillo. Carlos was the leading rider at Agua Caliente down in Mexico, and that's how I became an agent. I owned horses at the time. I would train some of them down in at Caliente, got to know Carlos, and he said, hey, I need an agent. Do you know anybody? And I said, look, you know, I'll tell you what, man. I'll become an agent. I'll introduce you around. I know all the trainers. And you'll get a real agent. After 5 days, you look at the jock standings, and Carlos Delgadillo was tied with Lafitte Pincay at Del Mar.
Pretty well.
Next thing you know, I'm an agent. So.
And you bring up Agua Caliente, and so explain. I mean, Agua Caliente 40 years ago was good racing. It was not Agua Caliente. No, you got some. We got good riders from there. We got all good trainers come from there. I mean, it was a viable live scene.
Well, and the track was also wonderful, and that's why a lot of us, like I would send all my 2-year-olds down there, and one of my best friends, Jose Magana, was one of the leading trainers down there, and to be honest, Hammer, it was $20 a day to train down there, just like 90 or 100 up here. So you'd leg your horses up down there, maybe breeze them once or twice. The horses that couldn't run, you just keep down there. The horses that could, you'd send up here. And on weekends, I'd see Laz Barrera down there. I'd hang out with Laz. And, you know, when he wasn't racing here. It was a wonderful time. And good racing, like you
and
said.
And good racing. And guess what? The birth of the pick six. They had the 5-10 where and people, I mean, I didn't understand that. I was just kind of coming around now and, you know, as a fan, and I didn't really get it. And I would see people putting money together, and they would send somebody down to go bet the 5-10, 5-6, 7-8, 9-10. And that was the birth of the pick six that came up, and I think Hollywood Park had the first pick
six. That's right, yeah.
And so that's where it came from Caliente.
Absolutely.
Pretty wild, huh?
And you know, it was kind of cool. When you would win a 5-10, they would take you into this room in the back that had a vault that was like a 10-foot by 10-foot vault. One of those things, you know, where you turn
around
it like
the big circular
one? Yeah,
ones.
Exactly. And they, you know, they'd hit, here's your 20 grand or something. And now here you are in Tijuana, Mexico at $20,000. And that's a whole different issue, right?
And back then, you know, it was okay. I mean, if you said, what are we going to do with the weekend? You said, we're going to Tijuana. Well, that was okay. I mean, you wouldn't do that today. But there was a lot of things, a lot of different things to do in Tijuana at the time. It was not a, you know, it was something you could talk about. Put it that way.
Yeah, there were days like you can't believe. And it was, and for me, it was such an honor because on Saturdays and Sundays, I lived down in the San Diego area for a period of time. I had my own table. And Jorge Hank Ron, who's the owner of the track, would be right beside me. Laz Barrera would be, you know, a couple tables down. It was a lot of fun. Those were days.
Carlos Delgadillo, Agapito.
What are they, cousins? Or second cousins, something like that? Yeah.
Because there was four of them at one the same time.
Yeah, and Carlos was leading rider for maybe 2-3 years, and was a really skilled rider. The best we did down here with Carlos was, I think he was 10th in the standings at Del Mar and at Hollywood Park, and maybe second or third at Fairplex Pomona in those days. Yeah. So that was my first jock, and that led to Kenny. And, I also represented Daryl McCart, you know, now a steward.
Okay.
And that was good. And my last jock was Aaron Greider. And Aaron was actually, got lucky with him, he was leading rider at a Hollywood winter meet. So those were the days.
And rode horses for Charlie. Aaron did.
Oh yeah, yeah. And
when he first came around.
And I rode a lot of horses. And when Jose Santos came out here for 2 years, I was his agent out in the West Coast.
Oh.
So between Jose and P Val, we rode a lot of horses for Charlie. Those were good times.
Where did the Crafty nickname come from?
When Gary Stevens won the Derby in 88 on Winning Colors, Mark Ratzke was writing for Daily Racing Form, and he wrote an article on Gary's ascendancy from, you know, from the bushes up in the Northwest to winning the Kentucky Derby. And the last sentence said, Gary Stevens is represented by the Crafty Jeff Franklin. And the next day, Steve, I swear to you, the next day I go to work at Hollywood Park, there wasn't one person who called me Jeff.
Everybody,
and it was like they got together at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, okay, let's start calling this
from
guy
now
Crafty.
On he's
and,
Crafty
and it, that's what happened. And
that's
so
hysterical, because everybody knows you as Crafty, and yeah. And it's very funny, you know, when you first started coming on the show too, they said, oh my god, you got Crafty on, and I got the biggest kick out of it.
Well, that's
but
funny,
I didn't know the origin,
because I was out there in the infield during those years. I mean, I wasn't working at the racetrack, and then I started up there, then I went back east, and so we never worked together, so to speak, at the racetrack. So I mean, I'd heard the name and I didn't know who the hell they were talking about, to tell you the truth. And then it was only a few years ago when you start coming on the show, that Crafty Jeff Franklin, I never seen him in the same room together. It must be the same person. So that's the first I heard the story. So now I know.
That's great.
And so, Hammer, do you remember the days when they had K-Win Radio, which was Santa Anita's internal radio program?
You could come to the track, absolutely.
Yeah,
and it was likening to going to a Dodger game, and bringing your transistor and listen to Vin Scully, because that's what everybody did. And you could come here and listen to the calls, absolutely. And that didn't last that long.
No, it didn't. But it was fun because like Kurt Hoover would have me go up in the booth way up there,
yeah.
And would ask questions about, you know, what about Gary's horses this day, et cetera. Well, and you could actually, he had his gauge where he'd watch people in the infield, gather around this particular carousel and see how many people would be listening to the to the guest. And he'd say, oh, that's somebody I have to get back. You know, and he said, you're number one. You know, he'd have 40 people listening to you.
Like, okay, because they as I remember it, they had it on in the wine shed.
That's what it is, the wine shed. Right.
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 And so because I was more kind of over here on this old tote board at the top here. I used to climb on that fence and watch right there. But I'd once or wander over there to the wine shed in that, and I would.
And they could see the wine shed from the
Absolutely.
That's where it was. You've reminded me.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
those were days, man.
I have not heard a reference to that before. And how Hoover was working for who at the time? Was he in house?
Yeah. I can't remember his capacity, but he put on K-Win, and he might have done other things externally for radio, etc., but I can't remember exactly at the time.
One of the great opinions.
Curse great.
You know, anywhere. And it's funny. Remains somehow, despite this decades-long career, remains, a lesser-known resource. And he's funny because he's been on, but he's very hard to draw in. For visits.
That's a perfect summary. And he's very understated, very controlled. But when Kurt throws one of those Hooverisms at you, the guy has a great perspective. Yeah. I really respect him and have for years.
He's had one of the long-running.
He's a Southern California favorite. But like you said, kind of under the radar.
Still, he had that period when he was on HRTV. He had and when HR was. I mean, not that TVG was shtick, but it was
comparatively.
Comparatively, it was more highly produced and gussied up compared to HRTV, which was bare bones and had, just had lots of serious. Not that the TVG people weren't serious, but to me, and it's funny, I never had. People say, why don't you have the TVG people on more often? And I say, because I never had TVG on a cable system for the longest time. So I didn't have any, I didn't have a TVG account. I just didn't have any connection. And then, in 2005, 6, 7, the show was, was getting established, HR and Express Bet were, Johnny D, it was on the show. I wish he would. I keep asking Johnny to come back
there's no substitute for Johnny D.
There's only one Johnny D.
He's the best.
That's how it was established. And so, John White and Kurt Hoover and Johnny and Millie Ball and who else? Becky Witzman. Carolyn Connolly, who also happened to be John's wife. Parada's
right.
wife at the time. Those were the people Scott Hazleton.
Seemed to be more visible for the show,
especially here, especially when you came here.
Yeah,
because when you came to Santa Anita,
because I remember hustling people, early on, and John White was one of the earlier ones, but they were more here, it seemed to be, because that's who did it, and down at Del Mar as well. And it's not like it wasn't a knock to TVG people.
They weren't
around as
they
much.
Their studio was over by Hollywood, right?
Correct.
It's still there, right?
Right.
Is that the same? They're still there.
Yeah, Santa Monica area.
Yeah.
Right.
They have a bigger sign on the side
you drive by it.
Yes.
Right. And of course, in those days, I was president of a rival company called YouBet.com. And so, the less that TVG got airwaves was good news for us, because they controlled everything and we were only on the internet. Surprisingly, though, our handle actually exceeded TVG's.
Early on. You were with Johnny there. John,
I was hired at YouBet maybe a year or two before John. And actually, management came to me. At that time, I was only vice president, and they came to me and said, we need somebody to help us with racetrack relations. I said, oh, DeSantis is, I mean, you can't do any better than that. And so he was with the company for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And then was purchased. Then you guys.
Oh, we sold to Churchill in 2009.
That's right.
Twin Spires.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And that's when they were in the big acquisition mode. When they, what was the Beulah?
Win ticket.
Oh, it's unbelievable. These are like, you know, this is like.
With the Twins. Did the Twins go with that sale? Whatever happened to the Twins? I mean,
The Beulah Twins.
I can't remember.
Right?
I don't know. Yeah.
They should get a lot of credit for people watching TV, racing on TV. I mean, for whatever reason. But I just did, when you said Beulah, I think of Mr. Weiss, Mark, who I know well, Mike Weiss, and the Twins. And I was just
Mike Weiss came from Beulah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he ran.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. In fact, I ran into him in Arizona just like, I don't know how many months ago.
Yeah, that was his idea. He brought them on. And
well, because a lot of innovation came out of...
Very, very, very smart guy.
I mean, Beulah was a hotbed.
It was a hotbed, but see, that was a situation where he had a creative guy. He didn't have to go upstairs to get things done. If he wanted to do it, he just did it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, sometimes that's good.
Well, and let's face it, there's often a bridge between what horse players want and what management conceives of. And guys like Mike understand horse players, and I'd like to think the three of us, you know, do. And so, you know, it's easy to build a product. I designed all the interfaces at UBet myself.
Because you just did it, you don't have to go through anybody. And so.
Well, and you do, this is what I'd want to see as a better, and you
the
just
interface.
Build it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I had my problems a lot is I had to go ask somebody else to do it. And, nobody's going to like that or whatever, you know. And I, you know, my situation was, okay, if they don't, fine, we'll try something else. Where everyone's, oh, what if it doesn't work?
What if it doesn't work?
Okay, well, if it doesn't work, we'll move on. Yeah. So that was a frustration. And so I always appreciated, you know, guys like you and Mike who could just do it. And like I said, who cares if it didn't work? Guess what? Next month they'll come up with something else that will work. And it was a good time for guys like anybody that has an idea to.
The challenge was this, though, Hammer, was that guys like me had not been classically trained in software engineering. And yet I had almost 40 engineers that I had to direct. And I never wrote a line of code. So it's hard to tell when a developer comes in and says, Jeff, what do I do about this, this, or this? And I just have to kind of convert it to stupid ease, which is, look it, when the guy clicks here, this should happen. You got it?
Right.
And he'd say, well, not really, but they try.
Well,
and that went on for 20 years.
I take this back to today. I remember when I started a couple little websites, and it's all about navigation. It was something about you shouldn't have to go here more than two clicks to find what you want. And I started talking about a couple of pet peeves I have. We're going to get into one of them, which is what racetrack websites and what people look for when they go to a racetrack website and why you can't find it on many tracks. You know, you shouldn't have to hunt for the changes, in other words. But when I go to the track, if I'm going to a website at 9 o'clock in the morning at a racetrack, chances are I'm looking for something racing related, and I shouldn't have to guess where the changes are, the scratches are to get there. That's
hallelujah. And if I can digress just for a moment,
sure.
Steve, you know, I am a real opponent of vanity sites. And too many times businesses build vanity sites and they don't even know the true usage metrics of how people flow through the site. You know, of the 80 features I have, what are the top three? And doggone it, make sure people can get right there. And in racing, you know, scratches, entries, things like that are often buried five layers deep.
Like the gift shop and scratches shouldn't be on the same
there
level.
You go.
One should be highlighted. One should be, you know, an addition to. And on many sites, they're not. And I'm going to talk about that event when I get it all straightened out. And then there's a couple sites. I'm just going to mention Naira. When I go to Naira site and all they type is an NYRA, on the front page, it says scratches and changes. I don't have to go through dining or wagering or anything like that. I click on that, and I got my scratches in a matter of seconds. And it's not a contest to hey, you know, at some point you go, I made it. you know, I don't even care about the scratches anymore. I'm just glad I found where they are. So I've got a deep dive into that.
I'm equally befuddled by tracks that don't even tell you if they're racing on a particular day. And you have to go five layers deep just to find out what's your racing
calendar.
The race schedule.
Yeah. I can tell you that what they're serving in the dining room that day, but you can't tell me when's the first post.
Yeah.
So I'm going to dive into that a little bit later. But it's just common sense, right? What was best is you didn't know how to program. So you just wanted to go from A to B. You didn't care how
And eventually we got very sophisticated at understanding the user journey, use cases, as we would call them, where we would say, all right, Bick's coming to the site. Let's make a profile for him. What does he want to see? Hammerly's coming to the site. There's a profile for him. What's he want to see? And then we would weight those and we would say, okay, we've got three typical personas of people are coming here. Let's make sure they each can get to where they want to get to effortlessly. It became a science at that point. It's really fun.
It's also fun giving out winners, helping people win using ThoroughGraph. And with Jeff here live in person. And
where are we going?
We'll do it geographically, I guess. We'll start with Florida. Start with the Florida Derby.
Oh, great.
Right?
I thought you were going to say start with here. We can't do that.
Yeah, for those if you haven't, if you missed it.
Hammer, you can share the sheets if you want.
Santa Anita is some of the contenders. Taking a break. Will not run Saturday or Sunday, but it will make for terrific racing next Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
So, Steve, do you want to walk the plank or should I?
Well, we can just say we're going to look at the Florida Derby and the Fantasy at Oaklawn, the two races this week. And I rather than the Arkansas Derby, which to me, and we can talk about the Arkansas Derby maybe, but from a ThoroughGraph perspective, it really felt like it's a very distinct group of horses that are the likeliest winners. Before we do this, we should probably recap from last week.
Great. So I was profoundly 0-2 last week. I loved Agate Road down at the fairgrounds. He ran a disappointing, seventh or eighth? Really had no excuse.
Uninvolved.
Got lucky and actually hit the exacta because I boxed Anna Marie, Catching Freedom, and Agate Road. But really, I wanted Agate Road. You know, he was my key. But so I walked into, you know, maybe a little bun single. But I was totally wrong with Agate Road. And there went one of my Kentucky Derby future bets down the toilet, I'm afraid. So that was not a good one for me. And then in the Jeff Ruby, I was equally disappointed by Othello, who ran, I think he ran like last or next to last.
He showed absolutely nothing.
Nothing, and I was just astounded. So anybody who listened to me last week is behind in their rent payment.
Well, I mean, the idea, of course, of the conversations is, you know, more pattern discussion and pattern recognition, and then applying it, you know, to the odds board and making decisions that way. I mean, who is potentially, you know, positioned to run well? And certainly endlessly made, you know, perfect sense. I mean, he was, you know, proven on the synthetic, and you didn't have to worry about that equation as much. Not that even seems to be a guarantee of anything at Turfway.
It's true.
It's a very strange, I mean, from that standpoint, you got horses just because they ran well at Presque Isle, and the Presque Isle horses have done fine, but and Woodbine horses, etc., and not every synthetic surface is the same, but you do anticipate that, you know, they're going to run all right. They're going to get over the surface, and you get some performances that are, you're just like, what was this? I mean, this is a horse that's supposed to be competitive in this spot, and you don't want to have to wonder, you know, one of the pieces of the puzzle that you feel comfortable about is, well, this horse is proven over synthetic. And it doesn't, and ends up not providing you any benefit.
Right, and to go along with that, to see a horse like Endlessly, who just traveled beautifully over the surface. And I was proud of Michael McCarthy basically saying, I'm not running back in the Derby. And
yeah.
Understanding, I don't want to say the limitations of his horse, but the preferences of his horse. And for those of us that have known him for years, it's like, yeah, the guy's a great horseman. Good for him.
I'll tell you the horse that was very difficult to project, and I've got tremendous respect for Larry Demarest. West Saratoga's performance was a little eye-popping. This was a really good effort. I mean, he was attending the pace, and he finished. And here's a horse that, you know, that's won at Churchill, stake winner at Churchill, and everybody's going to be dismissive and they think, oh, it's a nice story, but there's a lot to be said for the effort that he turned in. He's plucky. You're crafty and he's plucky.
Okay, there you go. So that was last week.
Yes.
Hopefully this week will be better. I suppose I'll having the mic in hand, I'll just start with the Florida Derby. And well, it begins and ends with Fierceness. If he fires, this race is a fait accompli. And
that was also true in the Holy Bull.
Absolutely. And what I found fascinating from a Thoroughgraph perspective, and you know, we're well over 1,000 people who are getting the sheets every week sent to them that Steve, you and I will be discussing. So for those of you that are looking at them, you'll see that even with that bad appearing race, he ran a 4,
yep.
Which, you know, to put things in perspective, would put him right in the mix with anything. And in fact, you know, we can see some horses that would love to run a 4. So let's suppose he doesn't fire for any reason. I think Shug's got the logical second choice. No surprise, Conquest Warrior, and you know, lightly raced horse who seems to be getting better. Unfortunately, he's only 3-1 in the line. So it doesn't really, for me, provide much of a value alternative to Fierceness. Finally, though, if Hammer were to say, Crafty, tell me about somebody with some value, I'd say, let's look at Real Macho. I think the mile and eighth will hit him right between the eyes. He ran a very good number last time, two starts ago, and was eliminated last time. Horses like this, I can easily disregard that botched effort. He was turned sideways and everything, and he might run a 2 or 3 on Saturday. So those are the three that I've narrowed it down to. I guess I'd be remiss in not pointing out Hades, who unfortunately also is 7-2. He's unproven. He's run a couple of sixes, or he ran a 6. He's undefeated. Nice racehorse. For some reason, part of me is holding back to really endorse him on Saturday, though. So Fierceness is the horse to beat.
He's the horse to beat, and then he draws the 10 hole on an oval where anything outside the 8 has been the kiss of death unless you're Big Brown. And so he's got that added twist that you're counting on. Obviously, we'll talk to Mike Welch tomorrow. We'll get the benefit also of Dave you know, giving us Pace and Dave, you know, adding clocker observations from Palm Beach Downs. I mean, yes, if he runs, this is the same scenario we dealt with.
No, it's true.
60 days ago. I mean, if he runs back to anything close to the Breeders' Cup, and you know, the discussion points have now become: is he a horse that needs things his own way? And he's going to leave from the wide post where he's going to encounter, you know, some other speed, notably Hades, who, you know, wants to be on or near. And Seminole Chief probably is part of the pace as well. So there's some things working against Fierceness again here that I think people will be much more cognizant of going in on Saturday.
Well, you know, if you look at him, he's drawn towards the outside in every race. So whether that's good or bad, but he does have some experience with being out there, but it's double at Gulfstream. On the other hand, once again, this isn't the final he doesn't have to win. He has to run good. He's got 36 points. I mean, he's probably in as far as that goes, so there's no really pressure on.
No, he needs a board.
He needs a nice, good race and heading into the Derby.
Yeah.
And I don't know, what do you think he's going to be? Is he going to be 8-5?
No way. No way. He's even money.
To be the consensus.
Okay.
And then there's discussion that Conquest Warrior, everybody's in love with, but is going to have to get faster to win. That he'll be second choice. Hades third choice is the way it seems that the mindset, from what I can gather.
Let me ask you about a horse that I had circled, and I like your Real Macho situation where he'd run a bad one and then they forget about him and the odds
exactly.
Is really going to go. That's
he might float to 25
exactly
30 to 1,
like so. He did a couple races ago.
Right.
The one horse, Frankie's Empire. I was taking a look at him. This is his third time going long, but second time off his little cycle here. He ran a good third in the Fountain of Youth and didn't get beat too bad. Of course, he's stretching out a little bit. I looked at him. I was wondering what he looked like on the sheets at all. I didn't, because I haven't seen the numbers
yet.
He paired up,
and he, you know, because
what did he pair up?
Sixes. And he's absolutely, I loved him going in, but you know, that was also part of, you know, what was, essentially a Bo Yates, you know, double, because Fiona's Magic, you'll recall, we were all over, and Bo Yates was a little disappointed with Frankie's Empire's effort in there. So he's going to have to take the step forward that we were kind of looking for last month in the Fountain. But on that same topic, we got to talk about Grand Mo the First, who ran a courageous third in the Tampa Bay Derby, and then comes back in this spot for Barboza. From a number standpoint, he's in the mix here. I mean, if we're going to talk, you know, straight figures, I mean, Hades is coming off of a six, and with plenty of time. You got the 6.5 pairs by Frankie's Empire. Real Macho ran that 5.75, and we were disappointed that he reacted to it in the Fountain. That leaves us with Grand Mo the First, who, you know, paired up his first start as a 3-year-old, moved forward in the Tampa Bay Derby. If he pairs up or takes one more step forward, he's competitive, and he's going to be a monster price.
Well, you need to watch that race.
Which one?
The Grand Mo. It was funny story. I wish Canoes was here. It was right before the Tampa Bay Derby, and of course the lights went out in Georgia, and you couldn't bet. And I was up with him in this tweet, and he goes, "Well, who do you like?" I said, "I was going to bet the 9." And it was 12-1 in the program. He goes, "All right, I'll book your bet." I said, "Okay, what price are you going to give me?" He said, 15-1. I said, "Okay, I'll take 100 win a place."
And,
I was serious, and he kind of was for a second. He goes, "I bet better not." So we're watching the race, and he's like, "Oh my God! But when we watched this race, and this horse just got down the lane. He was in. He was out. He showed a lot of courage down the lane in a race that, you know, really wasn't run that fast. But I liked his determination. He never gave up. And what did they say? He got beat a neck for the whole thing.
Yep.
And just on that performance alone, at this time of year, you want to see the horses going the right way when the wire's coming, and he was going the right way with some determination. So on that alone, maybe he's worth a little bit. I don't know what the numbers look like.
Well, you know, Hammer, this is so interesting because Steve and I, for a couple of months now, Steve's been choosing races for us to look at, and a lot of the three-year-old races leading up to the Derby have been his choices. And so we've said what I'm about to say a number of times. These horses don't improve incrementally as three-year-olds. They don't go 6-5-4-3. They'll often go 6-6-6-1. And so when you see a horse that paired up like a Frankie's Empire or like a Grand Mo the First, you know, that is never really established a level, they're choice value plays. And sometimes you'll see one that just looks particularly good on the track. You hear a good workout or something, they've turned the corner. And that's where value is. And the thing in this case that's so onerous about Fierceness is his 2-year-old number was otherworldly. I mean, it would project to like a -2 or a -3 at Churchill Downs in May. So that's what you're up against. And if he doesn't fire, then we get to play.
And that's a great point that you mentioned. And that's the idea of the sheets, is to predict that big jump.
Not where they were, where
it happens.
Go.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Before it happens.
Right.
Because anybody can do it. Hey, well, whoa, we'll yeah. take that horse at 2-1. No, I want him at 9-1.
Right.
Exactly. And that's why, I mean, when you look at a Grand Mo the First, who's 15-1, Frankie's Empire is 12-1, Real Macho 20-1. I mean, all three of these have a number, you know, on their sheet that it translates to potential to impact this in any of the pay slots, including as a winner. And certainly, I mean, you look at Hades, and again, this is all about pattern recognition. He has taken, since New Year's Eve, when he ran the 7.25 in the allowance, then he runs the 6 in the Holy Bull win. So he has yet to go back, as they say, a 13, a 7.25, and a 6. This is awfully inviting, but he is going to have to go forward to win. He's going to be third choice, no worse than third choice, 3-1 maybe at the most, 5-2, 3-1. And how do you take that when you've got three other horses that have run sixes and fives that are going to be 3, 4, 5 times the price? And you know, this is what the equation is when it comes to, you know, to performance figures of this ilk.
And the other thing too, I'm reminded, is this race is 1 1/8, and we've seen a lot of form at a mile and 1 1/16. And so to me, a horse like Real Macho would figure to do very, very well at the additional distance. And we'll see about some of the others. They will separate themselves out, obviously, on Saturday.
I think that, as they say about the older horses, when they go 1 1/4, we'll see how they can handle it. I think at the 3-year-olds at this time of year, the step is 1 1/8. And then, of course, there the 1 1/4, nobody knows. But
that's right.
But that extra 16th of a mile, like I'm talking about Frankie's Empire, who's basically a sprinter, tried some distance races, but it's a little bit more asking for him, maybe. And this is where you're predicting, if he likes it, guess what? We're going to get paid.
Well, and on that topic, we should note, Ladom Bro comes out, you know, ran the Remsen at the end of last year. He's been 1 1/8. Conquest Warrior, that romping victory, came at 1 1/8. And somebody else has run 1 1/8. Seminole Chief, actually, in the Withers, and which was dismal. But I wouldn't necessarily hold that against him, given the slop. So, and you mentioned Real Macho has never, he's 5 starts, never less than 1 mile. A Mucho Macho Man out of a Curlin mare, and Rowan Crichton was sky high on him going into the Fountain. I mean, really expected. So I know he was disappointed, but that may have been a reaction to the 5. Oh. So anxious to hear what Mike Welch has to say. Let's shift gears to the fantasy, because rather than the Arkansas Derby, I thought the filly race was pretty fascinating. And you got a group of 12 in here that are somewhat interchangeable, right? I mean,
Well, you're going to hate me. I printed out the wrong race, and I actually handicapped the Derby.
Oh, okay. All
versus
right.
the
That's
fantasy.
All right.
So I will have an opinion on the Derby in a moment, but please do the fantasy. I want to learn.
Well, it's funny. There's a horse in here that I've got some affection for, the New York bred of Mike Makers, that I actually took a piece of in the Oaks pool last week. It ended up actually, she ended up getting bet down, I think, to like, maybe 28-1, 29-1, which I would not have taken, but I bet her on Saturday. We were in Vegas at the NHC.
Yes, sir.
She's got the pair of threes, the 3.5s, in the 2 New York bred stake wins, and that included the seasonal debut going 6.5 and then the stretch out in the Maddie May to a mile. This will be her first time around two turns. So you do have that equation for her to, you know, for her to negotiate. You've got horses like Where's My Ring? Val Brinkerhoff shows up, Hammer.
With the maiden.
But a maiden that's run races,
yes,
that easily should have broken the maiden. And she's coming off a pair of sixes, and she may be lone speed. And then there's Brad Cox with West Omaha coming off a pair of 7.5s. You know, so those are your principles. Midshipman's Dance ran a 7 last time. I always root for Anita Cawley and Anita Ebert in Just My Heels. This is the High Heels daughter. Hope she runs well. And you also got to talk about Torpina Anna and Lemon Muffin on the outside. I mean, there are literally 6 or 7 fillies here within, I call it 2 lengths of each other, but my main squeeze to me is the filly to beat. She's going to save ground, and you get Flavian Pratt to met out the speed. You know, she's got tactical foot.
Steve, you may know, is this the horse that just had an ownership change on Jerry's recommendation because of the
I don't know. I'm pretty sure
that's the case.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And just glancing at the numbers right now, she would be a standout. Boy.
And I'm just, this morning I went to see if the odds were up, and they weren't. So let me see if they've come now. And they have. There we go. Thank you. Unfortunately, this morning when I wanted to have them. So here we go. Well, my main squeeze, 3-1, 3-1 favorite. I was hoping maybe she'd be, you know.
Well, they're going to have to leave there alertly, and then they're going to be pressing there, getting in there, especially with 12 of them going after it. I was looking back and forth. I'm what's the price on West Omaha? 7-2?
4-1.
4-1-ish. I mean, I think
Torpedo Anna, the McPeak on the outside, is 7-2. Lemon Muffin is 9-2, fourth choice for Lucas, and that's probably so. Go ahead, Jeff.
That was the maiden who won.
Yes.
The last one, the Honeybee, which was one of these type of races, was wide open.
Yep. That's why I came back to this.
Torpedo Anna on the outside. I just wrote that down. McPeak was becoming one of those guys I can't catch. It's like a Mark Cassie for me. They win 3,000 races, and I've had 5 of them. But I like that Brian's coming over. Brian Hernandez comes over with the horse, but that can be a tricky switch there. I was looking at maybe a horse of bomb. Second time going long was Midshipman's Dance, and I haven't seen the numbers. Ran a decent race last time, and like I said, second time going long for D'Addario. Deodoro, excuse me, but this is a good race. This is going to be a teller, I think, in some of the horizontals.
I thought this would be a fun. Did you see anything just now at a glance?
Really, I just confirming my main squeeze looks really solid. And at a glance, I'm a little interested in who did I see on the outside here. The Tappet filly, Janelle.
Eddie Milligan.
Yeah.
Going to be a price, 15-1.
Nice price, and in a pattern that could spring forward, get her part of it. Oh, there you go.
Well, and I'm just circle. Looking. I just pulled up Timeform US to take a look at the pace projector, and this shows showing the Michael Pewich horse.
Maiden breaker.
All things go off the one start going 6 that's going to have to stretch out, and I think ran a 7. Yeah, ran a 7.5. It's a lot to ask. But if she gets away with some early, you know, easy fractions, you never know. These type, they can get brave.
Can we talk about the Derby just for 1 minute?
Yeah, of course. No, go ahead. Because
I know you have the morning lines there.
Yeah.
Can you get me the morning lines for the Derby?
Yeah.
Because I'll just tip my hand. I'm interested in liberal arts.
Yeah, liberal arts is...
I don't know how short he's going to be.
Well, it can't be better than fourth choice.
Wow.
That's for sure, right? How can he be? Yeah, he's 15-1 morning line.
I was going to say.
Wow.
Man,
but, yeah. There you go.
I don't think he'll be 15-1.
No, but that's. I'm all over that.
In fact, here, let's look at the line. Muth is 8-5. So Timberlake 9-5. Okay. We'll take it. 50-1. Timberlake is 9-5. Dymatic 20-1. Time for Truth 20-1. Liberal Arts 15-1.
Oh my gosh.
Informed Patriot 30-1. Muth 8-5. And I think Timberlake will go favored. Baffert notwithstanding. Just Steel 15-1.
Wow.
Which seems silly. Mystic Dan 5-2 off the Southwest win. Third choice. And Imperial Gun 30-1. Kind of a rare Oaklawn Derby prep where Steve Asmussen's horses are 30-1, 30-1, and 20-1.
Well, to be sure, the three favorites are formidable, but I'll be begging for pennies on the corner if Liberal Arts doesn't hit the board. I'm pushing my chips in there. That's a sensational price.
Well, and explain the sheet and why it's favorable.
Well, so let me bring it up here really quickly here. So I can...
I got it here, too, if you want to just do it off this.
Oh, no. I got it right here, Steve. Just bear with me for a moment. And so, first off, we have a horse that has never gone backward. He's never established a level. All he's done is develop and develop and develop. So we're in his sixth start. He's never regressed. That's a phenomenal accomplishment unto itself. The negative on the horse is that his two last numbers, which are a 6.5 and a 4.75, were accomplished on sloppy racetracks. So is he just a mud-loving type horse? I'm going to reckon the answer is no. But coupled with the fact that his breeding indicates and his thoroughgraph indexes on the lower left indicate that the mile and eighth will be right up his alley, tells me he might be all over a 1 or a 2 on Saturday. And if that's the case, he's going to be able to step with anybody in the race. He's a developing horse. And look at the pattern, Steve. He's been just expertly handled. And
look who gets on him.
Exactly.
Tyler Gaffalione picks up the mount here. And, this is why I don't think you're looking at the 15-1.
Probably
seats.
Not.
But... you know, you've got in Muth and Mystic Dan and Timberlake, you've got three horses with established, you know, low single-digit
they're runners.
Types.
They're
type
runners.
Figs. I mean,
they're runners.
Yep. Liberal Arts has to take another step forward, but, you know, Medina gave him 8 weeks here. You know, he's 56 days between starts.
And my question on a couple of the horses, again, getting back to the mile and eighth, Muth is really interesting to me because I can make the case that Muth actually wants to go longer, significantly longer. And if so, you know, Bob's probably got him, you know, wound tight as a spring. So I would actually say he's, quote unquote, a legitimate 8-5 in here. And I'll be trying to key him together somehow with Liberal Arts.
Out of curiosity, how would you juxtapose the Muth sheet? Because there's a very big difference between the one that Muth ran in the Breeders' Cup to be second, and the low figure of Fierceness in you know winning, and then the you know first start as a 3-year-old figure. Here, Muth ran a 6, but it's a winning. Six. He ran, you know, as fast as he quote unquote needed to, going 7/8. And if we had Steve Haskin on the call, Steve would be, you know, crowing about what a great way. You know, Steve, nothing he liked better than seeing these 3-year-olds kick off their season, cutting back to 7/8 and using that as a tightener. Middle distance and speed necessary to then propel you know, into the classic season.
So two comments. One is Muth was just playing from the eighth pole home. I mean, it's anybody's guess what he could have run if you know, it was a driving finish. But to me, more importantly, is that the common thing between Muth and Fierceness, those ones that they run in, you know, late two-year-olds, they establish talent, and that can't be taken away. We're guessing on everybody else, but a one as a November two-year-old in May translates to a negative two, minus two. And, you know, baby, watch out. If this horse decides to run on Saturday, well, you've got yourself a big issue. So, again, one of the things I love about Thoroughgraph is it really gives you an inarguable, objective a benchmark that a horse like a Timberlake, like a Muth, et cetera, can run back to at any time and says, okay, man, I'm a serious racehorse. And that's how I use them. So I fear that horse. Oddly enough, Timberlake surprised me. I thought he'd run a little bit better last time. And people are probably rolling their eyes like, what more would you have expected? I thought he was a bit of a drive. And
he got out a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. And seemed to tire me, but I don't know what that's going to mean at a mile and eighth. We'll see.
How do you take into account, as I got the list here of the points and all that, so some of these horses go into the race, they're in the Derby, no pressure, you know, they don't have to perform at a peak limit. I don't have to run first or second or I'm out. So a little bit different situation. Maybe the trainer's thinking maybe we'll try something a little different, or the pressure's off, as opposed to a horse that's on the bubble or below the bubble that, hey, man, we are all in here. We got to run a, you know, a boom-out race to get here. Does that figure in at all when in your handicapping, Jeff, when you're looking at the sheets? Or the seats kind of like you put the blinkers on and you're just looking at the sheets. You're not looking at a lot of other ancillary factors.
So, Hammer, what a great question, by the way. I view the sheets as basically my foundation. So that's 50% of my analysis going into a race. And as we just said moments ago, what is a horse proven on a numbers, objectively, how fast does this horse run? And then you begin to bake in the other factors, distance, issues like you just said, track surface, jock change, post position draw, pace. And you have to modify accordingly. So in a case like that, it's always a guessing game. And I love talking to a trainer ahead of time and hearing what he has to say about something like that. Like, I cranked this horse for this race because I got to get in. And versus, we're just giving him a nice prep. We know we're going to get in. I want to take it easy. I want first Saturday in May to have my horse really ready to rock and roll. Right. And there are guys, I mean, obviously Baffert, that's he's.
And not everybody can push the button that way and decide how that gets done, but the guys that know what to do sure do.
Yep.
And like take Muth, for example. I mean, he's not going to the Derby, but he's Bob's not sending an empty horse there, and he never does.
Well, it's a grade one worth real money.
He's not prepping for the Preakness type of thing. This is a race.
This is a big opportunity.
This is a big opportunity to win a grade one and like you said, walk home with a $1 million paycheck. So he's ready to roll.
Right. And it's not like he doesn't have other options to send back there, right? You know, as we'll find out next Saturday, who's going to choose to run here.
Right. I mean,
gosh, anybody knows.
Well, as it happens, for those that are curious about that, I did notice there were a couple of sources, a lot of it coming off the Stronghold, that Stronghold work that was so impressive. Stronghold, Topalo back for Sadler, Tessuto for George Papa Padromo. EJ won the Cup, O'Neill, and then Baffert, Maimon, and Imagination seem ticketed, but he's also got Wind Me Up, Coach Prime, and Winstock to consider. So, you know, eight or nine, and whoever else wants to jump in.
I was glad you mentioned Stronghold's work. That was extraordinary.
Seems like the real thing, and that'll add to the intrigue next week. Good, because there's not going to need intrigue here this weekend. Tomorrow, Twin Spires weekend preview, and a lot more Gulfstream and Oaklawn, obviously. Probably get a hold of Jeff Taylor. We've got Mike Welch, of course, and everybody else. Nick will do the Aqueduct, Excelsior, and the four stakes at Oaklawn, the cross country. Plenty ahead tomorrow. I want to thank Dan Hall for joining us to pay tribute to Frieda Stronach, as well as a visit from Adam Koenig to explain the new incantation of the KHRC. Vince DeGregory and Jeff Franklin Crafty on hand. 80 years worth of jock agentry on display, and of course, Hammer. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM Archive Podcast in a little bit. Talk to you tomorrow morning, maybe from the press box. I just looked.
We'll be okay dry. Tomorrow? We'll be dry. We might need an extra coat. We never warmed up.
No, never did. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
Like sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul. We don't know.